Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the June 13 edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. This week, USDA released the WASDE and crop production reports for the month of June. We'll talk about those and much more today with our panelists, including Matt Bennett of TGM from Windsor, Illinois, Elaine Cove of Mastering the Grain Markets out of Elkhorn, Nebraska, and Ellen Dearden of AgriView from Morton, Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, let's begin our discussion this afternoon with this question. As we move into these lower levels, I'd like to know what you are telling producers about sales they have not yet made, what kind of management things they might be able to do. And we'll start maybe, Matt Bennett, with you this afternoon. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks, Todd. Obviously, we're entering a little bit different phase here. It reminds me, as I talked to you about yesterday on the closing report, it reminds me quite a bit of where we were at in that late January, early February time frame, where obviously margins are going to be pretty tight. A lot of this is going to be dependent upon where they're at, of course, but you said sales they have yet to make. So in my opinion, when we're underneath the insurance price, you know, there's still a fair amount of weather to go through, so I'm not getting super aggressive on sales necessarily. I do think, though, that in the next 2 to 3 weeks, you know, if we can keep these, you know, percentage ratings so high, 75%, you know, if we do end up getting through the pollination coming forward, I think that, you know, I would want to maybe go ahead and push sales, even though we're underneath the insurance price. A lot of that will be dependent upon, you know, what our acreage report is as well.
Ellen Dearden of AgriView.
I may be a little bit like the Lone Ranger right here, but with prices under this insurance price of 462, I just can't do any selling except on that 20% that's unprotected by crop insurance or 25% or whatever it is for the grower. As a matter of fact, I'm buying summer feed needs for livestock producers because I'm worried about sourcing corn and or meal in the eastern Corn Belt.
And Elaine Cobb from Mastering the Grain Markets.
Well, Todd, I don't disagree with anything that Matt or Ellen just said about not being very excited about selling at these prices. But I will mention that mathematically, the perfectly rational thing to do right now would be to tear up or burn down your cornfields and replant it quickly with some short-season soybeans, because honestly, that's the only market that's offering profits. But obviously, there are more things that go into a rational decision than just the math. Obviously, there are very good reasons, rational reasons, to keep a rotation or to, you know, keep a variety of crops in the field. But I just mention it just to say that sometimes, you know, we make decisions that aren't perfectly rational. So to sit here and think that perhaps you're going to end up storing some of this grain past harvest, maybe cross your fingers and hope for an El Nino to spur some sort of bullishness from a bad South American weather situation, that's hope. That's a chance. It's a gamble. That's not rational, but that may be the right thing to do, in my opinion, at this point.
Hey, Elaine, like some of the rest of the folks we have talked to, including Matt Bennett, who just mentioned that he might be in the process, or is, I think, right, Matt, in the process of having end users, livestock feeders, go ahead and purchase. Is that right, Matt? That is what you told me, right?
Yeah, well, right. Ellen said that too, but we've definitely been talking about doing that, yes.
Yeah, so, and Elaine, are you in the same boat?
Sure, particularly in that DDG market where you've got a lot of short-term chaos going on right now. Pretty much you could send out any sort of crazy bid that you wanted for DDGs right now, and the merchandisers would probably accommodate you. You know, China really sparked a lot of panicking selling or a real drop in prices. In some cases, the DDG prices have dropped 20% in just this past week. So, and this may not be something that lasts. You know, you might see the market correct itself as it realizes the overall supply and demand for feed grain globally has not changed because of one Chinese fit. So this could be a real opportunity for buying feed, particularly in that part of the market.
Okay, so I am 4 for 4 on analyst on Friday afternoon then. that would like to have their end-user livestock producers lock in some feed needs. I think both for corn and soybeans, and since July corn and December corn are both at $4.47, we'll just say that's for 3 or 4 months, so old and maybe some new crop along the way. Does that mean that each of you sees how much potential to the upside market for corn futures? Are we talking 25 cents, 10 cents? There must be a reason that you would lock this or try to make these purchases at this point. And Matt, why don't you start?
Well, I think whenever we look at this, you know, whether we're buying for livestock or simply some of my guys maybe that or, you know, any producer that has sold at higher levels, you know, we've also been looking maybe to protect some sales just simply because of weather. And I think that whenever we get into some sort of a weather market, if you will, it's pretty tough to gauge just how much of that we might get back. Now, you know, whenever I look at this, to me, I think that if we can get another 30 to 40 cent move higher with any sort of weather rally, I most certainly would be a willing seller there, especially for my guys that are in a situation that they feel very comfortable about their crop. But I just don't see us making a run back to $5 D's. In my estimation, I just don't think that's going to happen.
Alan Dearden?
Yeah, I would agree that you've got to be a seller once we get above that insurance price. But given the fact that volatility generally increases the second half of the month of June, I'm looking at, on a rally, selling $5 December corn calls, thinking that take that premium and add it to your price. I know you have to margin a short call position, but you want to sell options when volatility is high.
And so in this case, and just to be clear, if you're going to sell the option, you're going to write the option, you've got a futures position, relatively speaking, right?
Well, we will not put on a futures position. We will probably do some cash selling.
Well, I agree that I think it would depend on the strength of the weather circumstance that would spark a rally. So if you had some amount of short covering or some sort of mild weather concern that had a little 20 or 30 or 40 cent rally, sure, that would be a selling opportunity for this summer, because as it stands, we have very good prospects for yield in this country so far. But if something more serious happened, you know, if we started to see a really long-term drought pattern move in, which no one is expecting, but if something really strange happened, then, you know, maybe the upside is fairly unlimited.
All right. So what are fundamental reasons to hold the market where we are, to not go much lower? It looks like the market's, I don't know whether it's taking a stand to go sideways or not, but it feels like it might be comfortable where it is. Am I wrong in that? Does anybody disagree with that comment?
You know, Todd, I think these past two Fridays, today and last Friday, we've seen a fair amount of, upside movement. I think today was more short covering than anything. Last week we were trading a ridge, but I think that people aren't willing to just completely throw this market under the rug just yet. In my opinion, I think that maybe some reasons not to go substantially lower is, you know, whenever you look every week that we're still posting some pretty decent export numbers, and then you look at our ethanol, we almost went through 100 million bushels this week.
Yep.
It's a pretty good sign that our demand is there, and, I think that our demand's here for a while. I think that, you know, cheaper prices as we've moved lower by all means are not going to hurt that demand as well.
There's also sort of a psychological floor at that $4 level, and the cash average price in the U.S. right now is about $4.23, so you've really only got about 20, 25 cents that the market could fall before you start really seeing that bulking at the $4 level, I would say.
Hey, what do you all think about these $2 and $3 handles that are on the cash prices in the upper northwestern part of the Corn Belt? They have some really big basis levels out there.
I was just up in the Dakotas, and it's really, really frustrating. And you can pin that directly at the door of the rail markets. Been a real mess up there getting cars and now being overloaded with past due cars. There's just really not a whole lot to do about it, except not lock in those new crop basis yet and try and come up, you know, with hopes that something changes in the rail market between now and then.
Are their bins full?
They've still got piles that they're working on.
Yeah. Did they plant corn?
So the Northern Plains, I think that the, and Informa numbers sort of back this up too, that there hasn't been a major switch to soybean acre. Perhaps some have been picked up in the past month, but no, there's still corn being planted.
That's a lot of corn. It sounds like a lot of corn to me. I don't know. I'm just kind of looking to see whether there's a place in here that there's a bottom to the marketplace. I don't know. The 435 is a point that might look like a place that would bottom out. I'm looking for reasons for the market to stay steady. We've got a few. You mentioned the ethanol market, Matt. You mentioned the export market. But USDA, Ellen, says that for the coming year, the export market won't even be as good as it was for this year. It boggles my mind some.
USDA has been pretty lax about raising the corn export number, but I believe Dave had an article today on earlier in the afternoon report that pointed out that China's policies kind of changed from shifting to storing beans to storing corn and building stocks of corn. And so I don't know that USDA has tapped into that idea yet.
It's a sticking point. Farmers will be stuck for the moment. They've got sales made. They've got crop insurance on. But there's not apparently a lot to do with corn. How about for soybeans? What do we see in that marketplace, Alan?
Well, we're still above the insurance prices, $11.36.
Right.
So my gut feeling is that farmers will do selling when futures get around this $12.40 area on the November futures. Maybe to play a few catch-up sales. I think we've got a lot of time in front of us. This meal market has completely fallen apart, and that's indicative of both the Asian market and the European market. So we need to see the meal market come back before we can get beans off to a start. But, you know, the corn market fell awfully hard during the last 30 days, and beans didn't go down quite so much. So we may need to realign those two a little bit.
You agree with that, Matt Bennett?
Well, I think, you know, whenever I look at new crop bean sales, at least from a personal standpoint, when I'm working with my producers, we feel pretty comfortable in making sales. You know, Elaine was talking about the fact that, you know, you could definitely pencil a profit with beans, whereas you couldn't with corn. And, you know, what I like to do is I like to try to look and see where we've been and where we've been trading. And I think with the corn situation, obviously, we've taken the profitability out, unless we just have record yields for some of these guys. Now, with beans, the profitability is still there, so I want to lock in some. I don't want to get necessarily hung up on a specific number, but, you know, at 1221 basis, the NOV, I mean, most of my guys with the basis levels they're looking at are around $12 beans. If they can't make money at $12 beans, I think they're doing something wrong.
So you want to lock it in now, and you're really protecting not only the price of soybeans, but the price of corn, your total profit for the farm using the beans. Is that right?
Well, I think that that's something a person can do. I'm not necessarily saying go out and sell 60 or 70%, but I do think that a person could push himself to 40 or 50%, you know, and go ahead, and if this market falls back a little bit, if the weather stays good, which I expect it to do, because I expect that we will have increased acres on beans. You know, like Informa's talking, I could see 83-plus personally, but, you know, in my opinion, if this bean market falls, then, you know, we'll go ahead and protect some of those. But then, by all means, if we're doing 50% of our APH, considering, you know, in 2012 we were able to still raise 40 to 50 bushel beans in a lot of places, I'm not too concerned about selling half our APH.
Hey, Elaine, any reason really for USDA to change acreage at the end of the month very much?
I think there would be some justification to slightly increase the bean acreage, just because there have been localized spots up in the northern tier, North Dakota into Wisconsin sort of areas, where they did have, you know, wet weather off and on. They were mudding things in. They, you know, they were struggling to get weed control down. And so there probably was some small amount of switching from corn over to soybeans as it got late. But as we see in the crop progress reports, it's really not that late, or it's going to be able to get to catch up. And overall, I don't think we're going to have a lot of prevent plant acres this year like we have the past few years. So perhaps some up to maybe 300,000 acres additional to the soybean acreage number coming out of corn, perhaps coming not necessarily out of spring wheat acres, but yes, a small, slight increase in soybean acreage, I think, would be justified.
Ellen Dearden, when I looked at the growing degree days, and I think I did, I looked at Illinois, but I think this is right for a large part of the Corn Belt, and I'm pretty certain that I've seen numbers for Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, maybe for Iowa, that show while you might think that we were behind on growing degree days for the crop itself, that we're actually, what, maybe 70 or 80 growing degree days ahead. So this crop looks like it will come in on time. And I don't know what impact that will have.
Well, it will come in on time if this same bias keeps up and or we don't have a wet fall. And even though we're not looking for a lot of hurricanes this year, we do have the prospect, should an El Nino start to develop toward the end of the summer, of having a wet, cool fall.
So you're talking about a delayed fall then, too, or at least crop that doesn't...
At least in the central Midwest. And if we're delayed in Illinois and Indiana, what's going to be the situation in North Dakota?
Nonetheless, we have a very, very good crop for corn and for soybeans. We have a wheat crop that is not in such good shape, but in much better shape than it had been. The soft red winter wheat crop looks still pretty good, probably is a good crop. The hard red winter wheat crop, not as great, but those numbers still don't look very good. And when USDA took a look at the numbers on the WASDE report this past week, or the earlier in the week, it suggested that it would all be made up by outside markets. I mean outside markets outside the U.S., wheat would stay under pressure, too. Elaine Cubb, is there... I'm looking for good news and really can't find very much.
Yeah, the good news for a hard red winter wheat producer that's seeing very poor yields, you're getting harvest reports of 15 bushels per acre, 10 bushels per acre. They're just starting to work their way into Kansas now. The one little bright piece is that you've got a premium still for hard red winter wheat over spring wheat, because the spring wheat crop is looking good and we're going to expect to see the protein coming from the south again. So a 25-cent premium above a very low price, you know, what is it these days? 584 Kansas City wheat futures. So that's one slight little spark, but yeah, really you're looking at a bearish global market and not a lot of good news there.
Right, and then on the staying with the global front, it appears that Ukraine, Russia, other parts of the world in the northern hemisphere actually are going to have good crops of all types. We could come up with a pretty burdensome supply across the board. I don't know. I'm not sure where to go with you all this afternoon, and maybe we should back into the marketing and management and what producers really should be thinking about when they pencil in prices. All their input supplies are done for the year. What kinds of things do you talk to them about when they call up and are asking about this marketplace? Because, of course, they didn't market earlier, or a lot of them didn't, so they're really stuck.
That's a good question, Todd. You know, I mean, bottom line on this, you know, as I said, things have changed significantly. For instance, you know, I was just looking at a profitability spreadsheet earlier, and, you know, for a guy paying, you know, maybe $275 an acre cash rent, which, as you know, is a fairly conservative number, just with normal costs, you know, if he's saying that his corn's going to make 200 bushel, you know, his break-even price right now is $398. And so, you know, at 420, he'd still be making a little bit of money. But I'll tell you what, he's not making a whole lot of money banking on 200 bushel corn. So what the questions I'm getting from guys are, you know what, I'm worried that if I don't have a bumper crop, I'm not going to be able to pay everything. You know, what do I do? And in that situation, if a guy hasn't sold anything yet, it's a pretty tough call. I think that's the toughest conversation to have. Now, for a guy that's got maybe 25 or 30% sold, you know, it's a lot easier to have that conversation if he sold that at higher levels. But like Ellen was saying earlier, you know, I don't really want to get too aggressive selling under this insurance price at this point. And if they do, I certainly wouldn't want to go over, you know, that amount, 15%, if they've got 85% insurance. It's tough. It's a tough conversation right now, though.
So. Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
It's a Friday afternoon. You're listening to Illinois Public Media. Now, here's Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey with today's weather forecast.
The statewide average temperature for June so far was 70 degrees and about one half of a degree above average. The statewide average rainfall was 3.4 inches, which is about equal to what we had in all of May and well on the way to the average June rainfall of 4.2 inches. Amounts of 4 to 6 inches were common south of Interstate 80, including parts of western Illinois, which has been dry. Rivers and streams, as well as topsoil moisture, have improved quite a bit in that area. The National Weather Service forecasts show a warm, wet week is in store for Illinois. Highs on Saturday will range from the upper 70s to low 80s. From Sunday through Wednesday, highs will range from the low to mid 80s in northern Illinois, from the mid to upper 80s in central Illinois, and from the upper 80s to low 90s in southern Illinois. Humidity levels will be high as well. Dew point temperatures will be in the 50s on Sunday, but climb into the upper 60s and low 70s by Monday and remain at those levels through the week. There is a chance of rain from Sunday through Wednesday, including thunderstorms. Rainfall totals will be in the range of 1 to 3 inches in central and northern Illinois and likely less than an inch in southern Illinois. The 6 to 10-day and 8 to 14-day forecasts for Illinois are for near-average temperatures and above-average rainfall. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
This agricultural program is a production of Illinois Public Media on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. In Chicago, the weekly changes from Friday to Friday look like this. July corn, $4.57.5 the high. The low for the week at $4.39.25. Settlement price down 12 cents at $4.47. December at $4.47.5. The new crop settled 10 and a quarter cents lower on the week. July soybeans for the week had a high at $14.75.25, a low at $14.10. Settlement price there at $14.25.75, down 31 and a quarter. November beans, $12.21.25, finished 2.5 cents higher. July soybean meal at $4.67.90, finished down $19.70, and bean oil at $36.69, finished 68 cents higher for the week. Wheat futures high on the week in the July soft red at $6.26.25, the low at $5.83.5, and a settlement price down 32.25 cents Friday to Friday at $5.86. July soft red, winter wheat, the hard red at $7.13.25, and the harvest month July down 22.25. August feeder cattle finished in a gap higher at $208.15, up $7.62.5 for the week. August live cattle spiked higher at $146.62.5, up $5.32.5, and July lean hogs for the week at $127 per 100 pounds, finished $2.25 higher. Find us online at willag.org.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
This is the June 13 edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason today with our panelists, including Matt Bennett of TGM from Windsor, Illinois, Elaine Cubb of Mastering the Grain Markets out of Elkhorn, Nebraska, and Ellen Dearden of AgriView from Morton, Illinois.
Okay, so I've got the three of you on, but I do have some people that remain at least friendly. Zwicker wants to hold on to his bullish side. I know I talked to him this morning and had a conversation, and he can still see numbers a little higher, a lot higher. not really high, but at least comfortable high. I know. And he's not the only one. Zuzulo is there. Actually, I honestly think that, you know, when we look at it, depending on what the feed and residual number is, there might be a few others that would come in. Maybe the grain stocks report is the big unknown or the wild card in this whole summer time frame as it relates to the price of corn and where it ought to be. Because it seems to me that it's very odd that in December and January things were really bullish or really bearish. And then we turned that market around, and now we're not really, I mean, 1.7 billion bushel carryout's not that huge. It's just not that big. And certainly it appears to me that there's got to be something else out there, but maybe I'm just wrong about the marketplace.
Well, Todd, if I could, yeah. I can tell you how I could get bullish, and it goes back to what Ellen was saying about the El Nino potentially, you know, formulating in the next few months, and the Climate Center is saying that there's a better than 70% chance that could happen. So if that happens, now you're looking at a fall high perhaps for the year. And again, this is sort of crossing our fingers and hoping, but it's the reason why I'm really an advocate for storage, for having your on-farm storage. And it's something that I think farmers have been neglecting for the past 3 or 4 years when you've had lower yields and you're not really pushing the capacity, your historic capacity. But I think that's something to rethink about this summer.
I mean, I feel really bearish at the end of this conversation. And I'm not sure that I want to be that bearish.
Well, Todd, I think that it's tough at this stage of the game whenever you've got 75 and 74% good to excellent ratings. It's awful early, though, you know, to get to saying that this crop is made. Now, whenever you talk to guys locally here, you know, and I've talked to guys all over the Midwest in certain places, but especially right around here, you've got the ground shaded and your soil moisture profile is full. You're wet, you're in good shape. And by all means, most of the forecasters aren't really talking any inclement weather to get through the growing season. So, you know, a lot of people are leaning this way, and I think whenever too many people are leaning this way, you've got to scratch your head and wonder if maybe you need to be thinking a little bit differently. But you know, I wouldn't say I'm completely bearish, but I don't want to see a person be put in a situation, for instance, with the soybeans, where they're not doing anything when we know we're profitable and we know we're above the insurance price, because to me that's a good time to be making moves.
Of course, you've been listening to Commodity Week from Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Our panelist today, Matt Bennett of TGM out of Windsor, Illinois, Ellen Dearden from AgriView out of Morton, Illinois, and Elaine Cobb from Mastering the Grain Market. She's in Elkhorn, Nebraska. You can always find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Follow us on Twitter at Commodity Week and at David A. Dickey.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at agrigold.com.